The elders for the opportunity to speak with you this evening. Okay, so a couple months ago in the spring, I knew it was wedding season, and so I thought it would be kind of neat to talk about marriage. So I signed up for the next slot, and here we are, and it's August. So marriage season is past us, but you can still get married if you want. Okay, so this evening we're going to talk about marriage. Okay. So everybody think of a good example of marriage in their mind. Somebody, a couple that they can think of that they've always looked up to as a good example of a married couple. So what's their secret? I think that happily married people put God first, their spouses next, and they put themselves last. Everybody else fits in there too, but since we're talking about marriage, we're going to concentrate on the spouse today. Now, it seems like it's really just this simple. If we'll put our spouse before ourselves, just about everything else will work itself out. So let's concentrate on that tonight. Okay, so here's the issue. If a marriage is having issues, having problems, a lot of times it could be that they're just not putting their spouse first. They could be following God and doing what God says in all kinds of other ways, but if somehow they're being selfish in some kind of way, that could be the issue. Okay, so a marriage, like any relationship, has a bunch of different layers, like an onion. So there's lots of different parts of the relationship that could be looked at, so we're going to look at it a little bit this evening. Okay, so here are some frustrations that wives sometimes have. He doesn't make me feel special. Now, this is like an emotional, he doesn't listen, he's not taking care of me and generally treating me the way that he used to. He doesn't do enough around the house. He doesn't work hard enough at his own job. He doesn't appreciate all the hard work I do, this being the wife saying this. He doesn't take care of himself enough. He doesn't do enough with the kids. I know that he could be better for me. Now, it gets kind of bad towards the bottom there, but these are some frustrations that some wives could have at some point. Okay, so how husbands sometimes feel. She doesn't make me feel special. This is usually more of an intimate thing. She doesn't work hard enough at home. She spends too much money. She doesn't appreciate all the hard work I do. This is the husband saying that. She doesn't take care of herself enough. She is always doing something with the kids. I know that she could be better for me. Okay, so if we compare them, they're kind of the same. Some of them are kind of opposite. So the first one is about feeling special. She doesn't feel like he's treating her the way that he used to. She doesn't feel like he's treating him. She's treating him the way that he used to. She's thinking that he's not doing enough around the house to help. He's thinking she doesn't work hard enough at the house to begin with. She may think that he could work harder and make more money. She's spending more money in his mind. There's a general lack of appreciation for the work that the other ones are doing in the relationship. About taking care of themselves enough, doing enough with the kids, or she's doing too much with the kids, not spending enough time with him. These are all the frustrations they could have, and they both feel like it could be better. Yes, so these are just feelings. We haven't talked about any actions. Some of the feelings could be selfish if you want your husband to be some super husband that he's not, or you want the wife to be something that she's not. That's not good. Some of the feelings could be valid. If you're clearly not doing something that you should be doing, that's an issue. Okay, so these are feelings. So what are some possible results or actions of these feelings? Okay, she constantly tells him about all the things he needed and that he needs to change. So this is a nagging, a complaining kind of thing. That's kind of one of the biggies, I think. She may complain to others about him, so she may tell him all the things he needs to change. She may tell her friends the things that her husband needs to change. She may stop taking care of the house as much or herself. She may spend more money because just doesn't feel like she's appreciated as much, and they may not be as intimate as before. Okay, so that's possible results that she may have if she feels that way. Let me back up. Okay, we'll move on. Never mind. Okay, so possible results of his feelings. He may tell her all the things that she needs to change. This is usually less than what she would be doing. Guys tend to kind of shut down and act like they stop caring. He may compliment her less or just treat her not as nice as he used to. He may spend less time at home, just find something else to do where he's not at home as much. He may spend more money because he's not at home as much. He's just doing whatever else. He may notice other women. And this could be just noticing how people may pay him attention at work or at the store or how they may pretend to on TV or whatever. Okay, so if we compare these actions, they're kind of the same. They're both thinking that the other one needs to change, and they're telling each other what the other one needs to do. They're complaining to others, trying to see if maybe their friends can give them help to tell them how to help their spouse change into the way that they think it needs to be. He's complimenting her less, not being at home as more. She's not fixing the house as much or taking care of herself as more. They kind of go together. She's spending more money. He's spending more money. They're not together as much loving each other as much. So you can see that how this is kind of a sad spiral of affairs that people can slip into. And I guess the trump card kind of thing, the wife may kind of hold intimacy things above the man, but the man will hold money things above the woman. And it's kind of an adversarial thing, and that ought not be. Okay, so these are issues that people sometimes have. So what are biblical answers to the actions that resulted from the feelings that they had? Okay, one of them with the wives can sometimes be a nagging and complaining thing. And this is kind of one of the bigger issues, I guess, wife issues, you could say. There could be a lot of reasons why it happens that we've already looked at, but we will notice that the Bible says a lot about it and why it should not happen. Okay, so Proverbs 21:9 says, it's better to dwell in the corner of a housetop than in a house shared with a contentious woman. Proverbs 21:19 says, it's better to dwell in the wilderness than with a contentious and angry woman. Proverbs 25:24 says, it is better to dwell in a corner of a housetop than in a house shared with a contentious woman. It's pretty close to the first verse there. And Proverbs 19:13 says, a foolish son is the ruin of his father, and the contentions of a wife are a continual dripping. Okay, so if a wife doesn't feel like things are going the way that she thought they would when she became married, she may do some of this. Okay, so now think about that good example of a marriage that you look up to or have looked up to forever, and try to think about a time when you heard the wife complain about the husband. You probably can't think about that ever happening. So it seems as if great marriage examples keep the complaints to themselves. You never know what goes on between the two when they're alone, but a wife ought not be contentious. Okay, so what is the solution to this? If you're a wife, try to stop complaining. If you're a husband, try to stop giving her a reason to do it. Even if she's justified or feels justified, it's corrosive. It's a negative thing to the relationship, and it should not be that way. Okay, so now to the husbands. One of the bigger issues is to have the temptation to look towards other folks. Matthew 5:28 says, but I say to you that whoever looks at a woman to lust for her has already committed adultery with her in his heart. 1 Corinthians 6:18 says, flee sexual immorality. Every sin that a man does is outside the body, but he who commits sexual immorality sins against his own body. Psalm 119:37 says, turn away my eyes from looking at worthless things and revive me in your way. Proverbs 6:25 says, do not lust after her beauty in your heart, nor let her allure you with her eyelids. And Job 31:1 says, I have made a covenant with my eyes. Why then should I look upon a young woman? Okay, so if we think about that good example of a good married couple, it's probably hard to think about the husband looking at others and thinking that way. So that's a goal there, of course, for a marriage trying to be successful. Okay, so the solution, husbands, just want your wife. Wives, spend more time with your husband. If we look at 1 Corinthians 7:3-5, let the husband render to his wife the affection due her, and likewise also the wife to her husband. The wife does not have authority over her own body, but the husband does. And likewise, the husband does not have authority over his own body, but the wife does. Do not deprive one another except with consent for a time, that you may give yourselves to fasting and prayer and come together again so that Satan does not tempt you because of your lack of self-control. Okay, so that's kind of a husband issue and then a wife issue. So if you think about the examples of issues that may arise between couples, it seems like if the wife doesn't feel like she's appreciated enough and the husband doesn't feel like he's appreciated enough, they both find other things to make them seem fulfilled. And one of those is they spend money on whatever it is that else that can make them happy. So let's look at a few issues or a few verses that discuss how we should treat the money thing. And we all have to use it in this world. Okay, Proverbs 22:7, the rich rules over the poor and the borrower is servant to the lender. Okay, so most of us have borrowed money or are borrowing money. Obviously, the more that we owe somebody, the less we have control of our lives financially. It kind of ensnares us and enslaves us. So if we can borrow less, that's obviously better. Luke 16:11-13 says, therefore, if you have not been faithful in the unrighteous mammon, who will commit to your trust the true riches? And if you have not been faithful in what is another man's, who will give you what is your own? No servant can serve two masters, for either he will hate the one and love the other, or else he will be loyal to the one and despise the other. You cannot serve God and mammon. Okay, so when we do work, we're supposed to work as if we're working for God and not man. So we're supposed to work as hard as we can. And so the money that you get from the work represents the worth of the work that you've done. So if we are frivolous with our money, it's as if we're treating our work as a worthless thing. And we only have a finite number of heartbeats. Each heartbeat is worth so much in the work that we do. And so if we don't try to take care of our money, then we can have more money issues that take us away from godly things. Okay, a couple more verses. Luke 12:15, and he said to them, take heed and beware of covetousness, for one's life does not consist in the abundance of the things he possesses. So it doesn't really matter how much stuff we have. Luke 14:28 says, for which of you, intending to build a tower, does not sit down first and count the cost, whether he has enough to finish it, lest after he has laid the foundation and is not able to finish, all who see it begin to mock him, saying, this man began to build and was not able to finish. Okay, so on the last verse, obviously if you have a project, it's going to cost a certain amount. And if you don't have that amount but yet start to build it, then you waste money because you don't get through it. So before we embark on something that's going to cost money, it's best for us to try to think about how much it's going to be and try to manage our finances. So if we're worried about money because of whatever reason, whatever issues we have, obviously, if we're thinking about that, we're thinking less about God and things that we could be doing in the kingdom if we're worried about those things. Okay, a little bit more. 1 Thessalonians 4:11 says that you also aspire to lead a quiet life, to mind your own business, and to work with your own hands as we commanded you. 2 Thessalonians 3:12 says, now those who are such we command and exhort through our Lord Jesus Christ that they work in quietness and eat their own bread. 1 Timothy 6:8 says, and having food and clothing, with these we shall be content. So basically, in this world, we need to work and mind her own business and live a quiet life and eat her own bread. Okay. So to summarize the money thing, we should try to owe others less if possible. We should be content with less. So if we just have too much stuff and it's costing us too much, we should get rid of some of it. We should be more productive. So how can a wife be productive? And how can a husband be productive? Well, let's look at Proverbs 31 for discussing how a woman should be productive. And we're going to look at most of the chapter, so if we could just kind of concentrate on the red parts, it's a pretty long list. Okay, so this is saying how a wife can be virtuous. Who can find a virtuous wife? And then here are the things that she does. She willingly works with her hands. She rises while it is yet night. She provides food for her household. She considers a field and buys it. She strengthens her arms. Her lamp does not go out by night. She extends her hand to the poor. She makes linen garments and sells them. She watches over the ways of her household. She does not eat the bread of idleness. Give her the fruit of her hands and let her own works praise her in the gates. So godly women in the Bible are busy taking care of their households, helping others, keeping up with things, and making an income if possible. You don't see in here any opportunity for being a busybody or complaining about this or that. They don't really have time for that. In Proverbs 31, the wife is busy being productive. Okay, so now for the husband. 2 Thessalonians 3:10. For even when we were with you, we commanded you this: if anyone will not work, neither shall he eat. 1 Timothy 5:10 says, but if anyone does not provide for his own, and especially for those of his own household, he has denied the faith and is worse than an unbeliever. Colossians 3:23 says, and whatever you do, do it heartily, as to the Lord and not to men. 1 Thessalonians 4:11 says that you also aspire to lead a quiet life, to mind your own business, and to work with your own hands, as we commanded you. So obviously, the husbands are to be working and being productive. So, I guess one of the complaints we talked about that could arise is where the wife thinks that the husband could do more or make more money, and it's not a big deal if we're working and want to change jobs and need to change jobs. I think the average stay at a place of employment now, or the median stay, is something like 4 years. So you don't have to stay at one place forever, at least these days in America. That's not usually how it works. Okay, so we talked about Proverbs 31, the woman being productive. We have these verses about the husband being productive. So if they're both being productive, and if they've taken care of the other issues we looked at with the debt thing and trying to be content with less, then the money issues will be minimized, and they can do more of the Lord's work. Okay. So the things we looked at, the actions that resulted from the feelings that husbands and wives could have, the complaints, the wondering eyes, both spending more money, maybe not being productive enough, not keeping the home, these are all actions, but they are symptoms of the real disease that could be there in the marriage. So what is the disease? The disease is pride. If we look at 1 John 2:15 through 17. Do not love the world or the things in the world. If anyone loves the world, the love of the Father is not in him. For all that is in the world, the lust of the flesh and the lust of the eyes and the pride of life, is not of the Father, but is of the world. And the world is passing away and the lust of it, but he who does the will of God abides forever. Okay, so pride is what makes, it pushes spouses apart. If the husband feels like he's got all the answers for the wife, and tells her how to do this or that, and she doesn't listen, he's really thinking that he knows best, and if she doesn't listen, he's thinking it's her fault, it's not his fault. But it goes the other way too. If she feels like she has all the answers, if he would just listen, then everything would be fine. But it really goes both ways. And if you're both butting heads and trying to tell each other how to be, eventually one of you has to break. And it's because of the pride of one or both that makes this happen. You may think, if this was an issue, you would maybe think, well, there's no way they'll ever change. They never listen anyway. It doesn't really matter. So even if I always give up and give them their way, they're not going to do enough for me anyway, so it's all for nothing. But that's not the way to be, especially if you think about how when you first got married, how much you loved each other and would do everything for each other. So if we keep that mindset and truly put the other one first, then everything will work out. So in a way, this whole sermon could just be this slide and then spend about 2 minutes and then be done. But so far we looked at symptoms and ways to fix things in real-world life. But what we need to be working towards is kind of a couple layers farther down. If we have any issues, we need to try to think about trying to be less prideful, putting the other one first. And if we do so, all the rest of the things will work themselves out. Okay, so the pride is the disease, so what's the cure? Put each other first. So husbands, if you'll do what she wants and needs, she'll do what you want and need. And wives, if you do what he wants and needs, he'll do what you want. It's pretty simple. So the big thing is not acting like you're better than your spouse. If you really treat them like they're better than you and no better than you, or as far as needs and wants, it'll work out. If we think about the example of Christ wanting to wash the disciples' feet and teach them that they're supposed to treat the others better than themselves, it's the same way in marriage. If we just treat the other one as if they're better than we are, then we're not going to push our ways onto them as much. And obviously, if there's sinful things, that needs to be worked out. But when it's an opinion thing, a lot of times that will cause all this strife that we've looked at. Okay. So if you both do what's best for each other, it's beneficial to both of you. You're both happier, and you can spend your time doing more productive things. So that's God's plan for marriage. Okay. So now let's look at a passage in 2 Samuel chapter 12. And we're going to look at how Uriah's wife is compared to a little lamb. Okay, so 2 Samuel 12, starting in verse 1. Then the Lord sent Nathan to David, and he came to him and said to him, "There were two men in one city, one rich and the other poor. The rich man had exceedingly many flocks and herds, but the poor man had nothing except one little ewe lamb, which he had bought and nourished, and it grew up together with him and with his children. It ate of his food and drank from his own cup and lay in his bosom. It was like a daughter to him. And a traveler came to the rich man who refused to take from his own flock and from his own herd to prepare one for the wayfaring man who had come to him. But he took the poor man's lamb and prepared it for the man who had come to him. So David's anger was greatly aroused against the man, and he said to Nathan, 'As the Lord lives, the man who has done this shall surely die. And he shall restore fourfold for the lamb because he did this thing and because he had no pity.' Then Nathan said to David, 'You are the man. Thus says the Lord God of Israel, I anointed you king over Israel and delivered you from the hand of Saul. I gave you your master's house and your master's wives into your keeping and gave you the house of Israel and Judah. And if that had been too little, I also would have given you much more. Why have you despised the commandment of the Lord to do evil in his sight? You have killed Uriah the Hittite with the sword. You have taken his wife to be your wife and have killed him with the sword of the people of Ammon.'" So usually we look at the example the other way, concentrating on what David did. But if you think about it, David had all these wives, and he instead devoured Uriah's one wife that he had. And that was compared to devouring a man's little lamb. So if we'll treat our wife like our little lamb, a lot of the things, a lot of the complaints and feelings that we started with on this, these slides, will kind of go away. If you had a little lamb, you would look out for that little thing and take care of it and help it in the ways that it needed. You wouldn't go and try to hurt it in a way. You wouldn't try to find other lambs to devour. Okay, so for wives, we're going to look at some verses comparing the husband-wife relationship to Christ and the church. And we're going to look at this Ephesian chapter quite a bit from different angles in a little bit. So we'll just kind of look at the red parts. We'll hit the blue ones later. Okay, so it's talking about what wives are supposed to do, the husband-wife relationship. So let's see. So right there, for the husband is the head of the wife, as also Christ is the head of the church. So then we see, just as the church is subject to Christ, so let wives be to their own husbands in everything. So husbands are supposed to love their wives, just as Christ also loved the church and gave himself for her. And we see here that he might present her to himself a glorious church. And if we'll skip ahead, it keeps on going, and then it talks about, but I speak concerning Christ and the church. So if we back up to the first part of the section there, God compared the husband-wife relationship to Christ and the church. So if you think about what Christ did for the church, he gave himself completely for it. He put the church first. He didn't have to, but he did. So as the church is related to Christ, that's the most important relationship that we have. But on earth, it seems as if the husband-wife relationship is the most important earthly relationship here. So it'd be hard for us to think about the church bad-mouthing Christ. You know, oh, when he was with that woman in this chapter, he should have done this. What was he, you know, we wouldn't think that. None of us have ever thought about saying anything like that. But yet, a wife may say that about her husband to others. It just doesn't make sense. Just like the lamb thing didn't make sense for the husband in the previous example. So it's pretty important. It's kind of a big undertaking if you're married, because that means that husbands really have to put their wives first, and the wives really have to treat their husbands like the church should treat Christ. Okay, so those were passages, examples, saying how we should be. So here's some instructions to husbands, how to put your wife first. 1 Peter 3:7 says, husbands, likewise, dwell with them, being your wives, with understanding, giving honor to the wife as to the weaker vessel, and as being heirs together of the grace of life, that your prayers may not be hindered. And now looking at the other parts of that Ephesians chapter 5. So husbands are to love their wives, and talks about presenting to himself a glorious church in the red part, not having spot or wrinkle or any such thing, but that she should be holy and without blemish. So husbands ought to love their own wives as their own bodies. He who loves his wife loves himself, for no one ever hated his own flesh, but nourishes and cherishes it, just as the Lord does the church. Nevertheless, let each one of you in particular so love his own wife as himself. So you're supposed to put your wife, love your wife as much as you would love yourself, and put her first. Okay, so now passages for the wives putting their husbands first. Again, looking at other parts of the same section. So wives are to submit to their own husbands. The husband is the head of the wife. So just as the church is subject to Christ, so let the wives be to their own husbands in everything. And then we see at the bottom, let the wife see that she respects her husband. And the respect part's kind of an important one, because if a man doesn't feel respected by his wife, in a way, coming home to the wife is the one place that the husband can go where he feels like he's somewhat in charge. Everybody has a boss, when they're working, and it's nice to be respected. So if that's not there, then that's a big hit, and it's difficult for the husband. So if you respect your husband and submit to him, you're putting him first, and arguments won't occur as much. Okay, one more passage, I think. 1 Peter 3, starting verse 1. Wives, likewise, be submissive to your own husbands, that even if some do not obey the word, they, without a word, may be won by the conduct of their wives, when they observe your chaste conduct accompanied by fear. And then in verse 5, for in this manner, in former times, the holy women who trusted in God also adorned themselves, being submissive to their own husbands. So wives should be submissive to their husbands and put their husbands first. And of course, we've already read the passages that talked about husbands treating their wives as they would treat themselves, in a way putting them first. Okay, so the good example of marriage that you thought of before, the challenge now is to try to, for each of us to try to conform our own marriages to God's word so that others will think of us as a good marriage example, not for our sakes, but just so that we'll be more like God's plan for marriage would be. So husbands, treat your wife like your little lamb. And wives, treat your husbands like the church treats Christ. So that's kind of a summary of how we should try to be as much as possible in the marriage or one marriage that we have. So tonight we haven't talked about how to become a Christian. However, we do offer this this time as an invitation for the Lord, invitation of the Lord, if you have a need to come forward. The reason we do this is because there are examples in the Bible, like in Acts chapter 2, where the word was preached and then people had a chance to come forward and become Christians. So if you have any need, we ask that you do so now while we stand and sing.